Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm your host, Matt Rossi. With me this week is my fantastic co-host, Joe Perez. How you doing, Joe?
I have learned how to export WoW characters from the model viewer and 3D print them so you can physically hold them. So I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
That's interesting to me because that's what Figureprints used to do, isn't it?
It is, but Figureprints... I was actually having this discussion with a bunch of folks yesterday and today as I was figuring out how to do this. Figureprints is a different technology and actually an older technology that used almost like a powdered paper that would be pigmented and then be put together, like fused together in some capacity. And it was really, really cool. I think the first time I saw it happen was 2008, 2009. It was really cool early 3D printing technology, even at a industrial level, but it mainly focused around low poly stuff, printing on texture instead of having anything that was like physically 3D modeled. And then they were very, very weak. I remember a ton of people that had ordered them, and they weren't cheap. They're still not cheap. You can still get them. They're like $150 US. But because they're that compressed paper, if you lived in an area that was extremely humid, and you had them delivered during a humid season, they could potentially just fall apart or disintegrate.
Came in like a plastic ball. Like I thought they came in like a globe or like a dome.
Well, kinda. So it was like a plinth that had a glass top to it. Sort of like if you look at those old classic movies where you're in the study and somebody's got like something super important under a glass dome, but the dome is removable. That's how they were shipped. I think it was a plastic dome. So it wasn't actually like sealed in any way. So it was very, very interesting, but they're not very durable. You can still get them. And it's, and like I said, it's a really cool concept, but not quite the same. And even now, the one that exists now is while it's using the new models from the game, it's still the same material. And while the technology has improved considerably over the last, 12 years, it's not to the same point that a resin printer can do. So like I printed my character as a test in 2.5 hours, and this thing is ABS like plastic quality. I could throw this thing on the floor and it's going to bounce. It's not going to break. So like it's interesting to me how far the technology has gone. And I could probably talk about this for several hours because this is my huge passion. But it's really, really cool that I can now take files of characters out of game, make them manifold, which means watertight, smooth out the polys so that they're not completely like low poly flat pieces. And because of how far WoW has come, everything has texture now, or almost everything has texture, which is fascinating. Because back in Burning Crusade, they were flat. You know, back in Wrath of the Lich King, they were flat. Like, if you got a piece of shoulder or something like that and had texture on it, it wasn't an actual 3D piece or something that was modeled into it. It was a projected texture over a wireframe, essentially. And now, when you get armor and you get shoulders or anything like that, it is an actual 3D composite material. Like, it's an object. It is something that you can actually have. Not everything is. Some things don't have it, like robes still have printed on texture and things like that. But it's fascinating to me how much is actually like being 3D modeled and 3D rendered right now. And then how many of the older things are still that flat projected texture. But it's been really wild, like, just to see the journey of how things have been.
I don't really have much to say other than at some point I will probably ask you to print out this character that I'm currently using to point at something. But dangerously, because she's using fist weapons. But yeah, it's an interesting week. As we mentioned briefly in the pre-show, this week is the BlizzCon line is coming out this Friday. So you'll get to, everyone can go to see it free. There's no fee or anything. It's not like the virtual ticket used to be. We can all watch these various panels and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the panels have been pre-recorded, which I think is actually kind of interesting.
I think it's good.
There's more stuff you can do, and nobody has to like be in one. They don't have to all be there at once to get it all done. So that's cool.
Well, not only that, but the production value gets to actually be there, because one of the biggest problems I always had with BlizzCons was, and I used to joke with Adam Holinsky all the time about this, is that doing live audio, especially for something that big and that long and that many different individual pieces, is a nightmare. If you do pre-recorded stuff, you can make sure that your audio doesn't drop out, or you have backups, or you have ways that you don't have to worry about, you know, your audience physically there or at home not being able to hear what's going on, which happened several times over the last several years. It's cool. It's cool to see them adapting and doing something, in my opinion, that I think will improve the online experience.
Schedule's out for it as well, so you can go look at that and see what they're going to be talking about and what there's. We already knew that they're not going to be an Overwatch 2 or Diablo 4 this year. That's already something that was said during the Blizzard earnings call, so we're not shocked that, you know, there's still a Diablo Q&A and other Diablo panels, so I'm sure they're going to be talking about Diablo stuff. What with two Diablo games in the pipeline, one of which will be coming out this year with Diablo Immortal. Obviously, WoW's got stuff to tell us about, because we've just got patch 9.0.5 on the PTR with a March release time. We know it's coming out in March if they can help it, and that's amazing. That's pretty fast turnaround for something that's just going on the PTR last week. But after 9.0.5, what do we got coming? That's one of the things we're hoping that we will find out at BlizzCon Line.
Well, considering that one of the first panels they have is what World of Warcraft, what's next, we can hope. Yeah.
But so I was actually going to turn that over to Joe for a second. What are you looking forward to the most? What are you hoping we get to see?
As far as like what I'm hoping they reveal, I want to know what the next story beats are going to be, obviously, like where we're going from here, because we've caught up with the campaigns, and that's sort of like my most interesting or the thing that I'm most interested about. The other thing that I'm looking forward to is I want more information about Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2. I know that we're not going to get any announcements this year, but I'm really excited about the development process for both of those things. Diablo 4 and Diablo Immortal are bigger, I think, than Diablo 3 in scope of what they're trying to do, but also more focused at the same time as far as what their development is. But we haven't heard much about it, so I'm looking forward to hearing more things out of that process, particularly from like the What's Next and the developer roundtable. And I think those are going to be the more interesting things. I'm also really interested. They have an interview with Braum, which I think is going to be really, really cool. Braum is an artist that has contributed a lot to the weird, distinct feel of Diablo. And I'm interested to hear more about that creative process, because I like art. I like hearing how art informs story and function. And Braum definitely had a hand to play in that. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm also looking forward to Overwatch 2 and hearing how they've been developing with the concept of a co-op game in mind, considering Overwatch was created almost purely for PvP. So there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to in particular. And then, of course, Community Showcase, because I love seeing what people in the community do. I really do. There's some very talented people in this community. I love watching the cosplays and the art and everything in between. So what about you?
I can't believe you mentioned Braum and didn't even mention the Planescape.
I was trying to keep it Blizzard focused.
Forget Planescape. Dark Sun.
Dark Souls. Yeah, well, yes. But we'd only have so much time, and I could be here for a while talking about how much his art has influenced so many different things.
One of the things I would love, and I don't think this is going to happen at BlizzCon Line or anytime soon, but I would love it if Blizzard finally went in back in on tabletop role-playing games. I mean, I think that that's something that they were doing in the early 2000s. They did World of Warcraft had multiple licensed games. There was actually a Warcraft game before World of Warcraft came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when World of Warcraft came out, of course, the license holder was like, oh, God, quick, jump on that. But, you know, those books were actually pretty good. They were good, solid third edition D&D books.
It's where we get the current model from of Azshara from. It's from that was the first time that they premiered the art for her. It was in one of those books.
And, they also did Diablo 2 guide, Diablo 2 Diablerie and Diablo 2 to Hell and Back, which was basically just taking Diablo 2 and making a dungeon out of it.
Yeah.
Dungeon.
The monster manual that they created for it was fantastic. I still have it sitting on my shelf. I still use it.
So there's all stuff I'd like to hear, but I don't expect to. I want to hear a lot more about Diablo Immortal. I want to know. I want them to come out and tell us what the monetization model is going to be.
Yes.
Not just hint at it. They've hinted at it. They've dropped some clues about it. They've said some things, but I want to know how is this exactly? Is this going to work? Give me the full rundown on this so I can know. Is this going to be worth trying to play? I'm a little burned here, and this has nothing to do with mobile versus live. It's live service.
Yeah, it's games as a live service it's a thing.
It's not always bad, but it has a real potential to be bad. And I'm going to say one of the games I'm playing right now is a game I love. I absolutely love this game. It's called Assassin's Creed Valhalla. You knew I'd work it in, but it has a terrible problem with its live service stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've made it very bad. You want to know exactly how bad it is, you can go look at all the videos people are making about how terrible this thing is right now. It's getting close to levels of Battlefront 2. I don't want that to happen with Diablo Immortal. I want to feel like I can play Diablo Immortal and not feel like I have to spend money to play it.
And not only that, but if you spend money, you get something out of it versus gambling, right? Like, that's the other side of it, and that's where things usually go sideways.
At least I'll say that for Ubisoft and their version. They do a lot of gambling. But yeah, I don't want to loot box too much. But regardless to that, that's one of the things I want to hear. I want to hear, like, some kind of idea of when they think Diablo 4 is coming out. I also want to hear that for Overwatch 2, and I want to know how... I can't do Overwatch because it gets the frenetic pace of the stuff coming and going on screen when it's like team deathmatch stuff. It's just too hard for me. It makes my visual processing can't handle it. It's one of the reasons I've never played Overwatch, because I get motion sick watching it happen. I can handle single like playing World of Warcraft, although sometimes with the particle effects all the way up, I kind of like have to back away. But Overwatch is just, oh, he's over there. It just, you know, I start getting motion sick. I'm wondering, will I be able to play this game? So I would like to know if this is going to be something where it's going to be is there any possibility of a single player person playing this game, or should I just not worry about it now? That's one of the things I would like to know. I also want to know what they're doing with the story, because, oh my God, I want to know what they're doing with the story.
Oh, yeah.
And they lost Michael Chu, which was an amazing loss, really. I mean, people forget how important he was to the story of Overwatch. So I want to hear from the current story team. I want to know what they're planning. Not like obviously they're going to keep stuff from us, because you don't want to just tell everybody. It's not like if you ever went there's an old story I'll tell here. Do you remember the original when Final Fantasy VII came to America? Do you remember the original trailer for it?
Vaguely.
They basically put Eris's death right in it. Like a love that can never be, and shows you her.
Oh,
dead.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And she doesn't die in the remake, so don't go telling me I spoiled nothing for you. I guess I spoiled that. But whatever, that's been out for a year and a half now, guys, come on.
I was going to say, I think at this point we're pretty okay.
But, you know, the original game, you know, came out in 1997, guys, come on. But regardless, this is the kind of things I want to hear. I want to know more about what's going on with the Heroes of the Storm too, because Heroes of the Storm is like either incredibly not active or very, very active, depending on what you think about its current development schedule. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to know how much is going on with Heroes of the Storm. And I would like to know, is this a game that you're going to keep pushing? Are you going to keep making stuff for it? Because I think in a way they kind of abandoned it a little too soon. I feel like they should have given it more time. quite frankly. I feel like it was a property that they really could have done a lot more with than they did. And I actually liked what they were doing with it. Their narrative stuff for Heroes of the Storm was really good and really interesting. And I thought it was a shame that they just pulled away from it so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the support they had for, like, you know, tournaments and stuff, especially at colleges, a ton more besides that. But I mean, we could sit here and do that kind of thing all day. And we do have to talk about other stuff. For instance, we kind of do have to talk about that PTR that happened.
Yeah.
They put the 9.0.5 on the PTR. But also, we need to talk about the fact that this week, as of this recording, we are recording this on February 16th, they have hot-fixed Castle Nathria, and specifically Castle Nathria rating, to offer between 33 and 45% more gear.
Yeah. I'm glad they did that.
I'm glad they did it, but I'm interested in the way they did it. It implies that they're going to come up with a completely different paradigm for the next raid. That's just not going to work as Nathria. Because they went out of their way to say that this is just in Nathria. I mean, we weren't expecting to get more loot in any raids from previous expansions, so that means that you're trying to make us sure we're not expecting this level of loot to drop in the next raid.
Yeah, so I think a lot of that has to do with the simple fact that while Castle Nathria was not wildly different compared to other raid drops from other tiers, gear has been very hard to come by right now, even with the insertion of the Great Vault, and players are hurting for it. Like, it's one of the most vocal complaints, and not just from, like, hardcore players. We're talking about people all over the, like, casual players, people that are just playing this game for fun with their friends. Everybody's having that same complaint. It's like, we were literally just talking about this before we even recording. Like, I can't get a main hand weapon to drop worth anything. Today is the first day since world quests have been a thing for me that I've seen a world quest with a weapon, and it's not even for my primary spec, it's for enhancement, which fascinating to me. But there's definitely I've been
seeing raid weapons drop in Revendreth, mostly because I've gotten 3 two-hand weapons out of Revendreth this month. But that's been like, what? Why does this keep happening in Revendreth of all places? And why is it the same item twice? Like, I got an axe, and then I got the same mace like twice, and that's fine for me. But if it's just like nobody else I know has been able to use those weapons. Like, I had, except other warrior, I actually tipped off that the quest was up so he could go get it. And it's weird that I have to jump on these quests. I'm full raid geared.
Mm-hmm.
Except for, like, weapons.
Same.
I haven't got a weapon to drop this entire expansion.
Same here.
So the second that I got my renown level up high enough that the world quests bumped up to 187 and higher, I started having to, the second a weapon quest drops up, I have to take it. It doesn't matter if it's ideal. And it's not. Every time I've gotten so many versatility weapons, I can't even tell you. For some people, versatility may be great. It's not that great for a warrior. And it's just...
Yes.
The Great Vault as a replacement for bad luck, as a bad luck protection thing, it does not work. If you're intending it for that, it does not work.
At least not in the current implementation, right? Like, it's not doing what it said that it was going to do.
No, it's not doing what it said they were going to do. I feel like it is doing what they said it was going to do. I just feel like people didn't understand what they said. Like, the Great Vault is basically just your mythic chest. The mythic chest didn't exist as bad luck protection. It just existed as another bite of the apple.
Yeah, but now the expanding what allows you to get stuff in it does make a difference to players, because there are, and I was talking about this with my members of my guild over the last couple weeks. Like, in concept, I think it's fine. And it's the idea of, if you do content, at its core, the idea of, if you do content, get a chest that has a chance of giving you other things to compensate is fine. But looking at it, you and I talked about this a lot. It's expand what qualifies. Make it more so that there's a broader spectrum of people that can participate in it and get something out of it, first of all. But the other thing that I find interesting about it is the Great Vault has no form of item detection. I have literally had 4 things unlocked, like having 4 chances of loot rolls across the Great Vault, and have seen... Literally, and I put a screenshot out there several weeks ago, all 4 items are exactly the same, and it's an item I'm already wearing. So there's no checks, and I understand people have been saying, well, you know, if you did this in a raid, you have the chance of getting the same loot. Yeah, that's true, But when you're rolling the vault and you see the same four pieces of gear or the same two pieces of gear and it's something you're already wearing, that feels bad. And
all this, no, doing the raids versus the Great Vault. Let me say this much. If I'm killing like a bunch of bosses, the bosses have individualized loot table to some degree, which means that this guy isn't going to drop the same stuff. Maybe I'll get something from him, maybe I won't. But if I do, it's not going to be the same thing that dropped off the first boss in most cases.
Yeah.
Sometimes they put gear on multiple bosses. That does
which
happen.
They did in like Azshara's Eternal Palace, right? Like,
but even then, it's still there's a variety of things that might drop. With the Great Vault, it just takes everything that the entire instance has and randomizes it.
Yeah.
Like, you'll get like this piece from this boss that you killed. And the problem with that is that, I mean, I'm getting the same trinket every week. I have gotten the same trinket show up every week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trinket I already have. It's a trinket that's not even very good for a DPS. And it's like, that trinket again. It's like, I feel like there should be a way to check off somehow. It should know I don't need this trinket six times in a row.
Yeah, and to add in, like, I understand that coding these things is a pain, and I get it, but the fact that there is nothing like that in place is mind-boggling to me, and then combining it with the idea that you are, in order to get items from the vault, you are still technically doing what is considered high-end content, high-end group content, whether it's PvP, whether it's Mythic Pluses, or raiding even, in order to get something of an appropriate level, you're pushing high-end content, that there's nothing like that in place. So I think there's two problems with it that they need to be compensated for. And I think this is, going back to the Castle Nathria portion, I think this is what they're trying to compensate for.
They said when they came up with Valor Points last week, when they announced Valor Points, they said that they weren't going to put Valor Points in raiding because they thought raiding needed a different solution. And people were, of course, upset. But then, of course, like 2 days later, they renounced their solution, which was just to bump up the gear amount. And that's fine. But one of the reasons that I was never really pro Great Vault as bad luck protection, I'm fine with it as what it is, which is basically another bite of the apple. It's just like it's a pat on the head consolation prize for, you know, it's basically your participation prize for doing content. It exists to get you to do more content,
which is fine. That's fine.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with it, but it isn't bad luck protection, because here's the thing about the bad luck protection that we actually had. For like three expansions, we had the coin rolls. We had them from Mists of Pandaria, Warlords of Draenor, Legion, so we had them four expansions. So from Mists of Pandaria up to the present, up to Battle for Azeroth, four expansions, we had the coin rolls, which had its own problems.
The fact that you were rolling against everybody else.
But here's the thing about it. They were targeted.
Yes. You could apply them when you wanted to.
Yeah. This guy drops something I want. I will then hold on to my coins and roll them here.
Yeah.
Because that will give me an extra chance at this guy dropping the thing I want. Does it feel good when that doesn't give you anything, when you spend all your coins in a week and you get gold or anima power or, you know, whatever it was called, artifact power? No, it feels really bad. Nobody likes that. I'm not saying, you know, the argument can't be, you know, well, if I roll a coin, I should get a drop. I mean, that's like it's a coin, it's a chance, but getting nothing or getting something that is essentially nothing feels bad. And that was the problem with those. And I totally understood why Blizzard wanted to take them out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really do. I'm not saying that, you know, ooh, bring back the coin, but the coin as bad luck protection actually served as bad luck protection. The Great Vault doesn't.
Yeah. And
that there's a level of that in there.
Yeah. And I think that's what they need to look at going forward. And I think, if they're going to keep loot as tight as they're doing, which I understand that there's a feedback loop that they're trying to maintain or perfect or whatever, and that every expansion it becomes a little bit different, especially with the elimination of Titan Forging or whatever you want to call it.
I want to say this because I have not said it up to this point.
Sure.
It was the best decision they ever made.
I would agree.
I really like that you don't have to go every week.
Maybe it'll be better.
Maybe the good one will drop now. I mean, it should either be the good one or not.
I shouldn't agree.
Like, I got it, but I want the better one to drop, so I have to keep. And I say this as a guy who often got the Warforged / Titanforged version to drop. I got fairly lucky with that kind of thing, at least in Mists and in Warlords I did. And yet it's not really fun. Because then you're like, you're sitting there going, okay, now I need to kill that guy every week until he drops the Titanforge version or whatever. And then I have to do it again because I need two of them. And it's just, yeah, no, it doesn't feel good. It's not great.
Yeah, but I think if they give, because of that, and I think it was a good choice. I'm on the same page with you there. I think looking at the Great Vault, I think it needs to be reevaluated. And I think that if they're going to keep being as stingy with loot as they are, which, again, going back to the feedback loop, I understand you want players to play your game. You want them to be inside of it. You're trying to find ways to increase player engagement. But if you're grinding your players down because they can't fill that one piece that they need, or they're stuck using something that they got out of a heroic and they're heroic dungeon and they're doing, you know, current tier heroic raiding and they can't get anything better, then there's a problem that needs to be looked at because there is no, that positive feedback loop isn't there anymore. And if the Great Vault is meant to help with that, they need to evaluate how that's working.
Yeah, but I gotta say this. This is not a problem. This is, to me, in my mind, this almost feels like a problem that was solved before.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because introducing valor points and then having the valor points just exist to bump up the item level of the pieces you win, like that drop for you, that's fine, I guess. But
I mean, I'm okay with it.
Valor points used to be, we have vendors who will sell you gear for valor points. And I feel like I don't know why that's bad, because the valor point gear, with some mistakes near the end, the valor point gear that you could get from Sunwell Island, the Alaqueldanas, was actually too good. It was straight up, like, it was as good as Black Temple
gear. Yeah, it was better than Black Temple gear, depending on your class. Like, if you're a shaman, that's what you went and got.
But I get you. But the initial execution and the way it was executed in other cases, where it was good enough, it was okay, I can at least fill this hole so I'm not using like a piece that's 20 items too low.
You know what?
I don't get why we can't at least re-examine that possible idea.
Let me ask you a question. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately too, regarding loot in particular, is would a going to almost a full token system feel bad or good?
No, because of Castle Nathria. Because we have a token system for weapon drops.
But only weapon drops. I'm talking about going back to a token system for everything.
The weapon drops tokens have made weapons feel awful this expansion. They don't drop enough. They're highly sought after. Nobody wants to trade it to anybody because everybody wants a weapon so bad. So you don't get any of that. A piece dropped, nobody wants it, but somebody will use it.
My counterpoint to that is I've gotten exactly zero loot out of Castle Nathria as it is. So, I mean, like, loot in general just doesn't drop there for me. And I'm not being hyperbolic in that at all. Like, everything I'm wearing, I've gotten from a world quest or pulled out of the vault in some capacity or have gotten out of something that isn't directly the Castle Nathria. And then after I get it, then it drops for me in Castle Nathria.
I've gotten a few pieces in Nathria, but my weapons, for example, are not from Nathria because I've yet to see a single weapon drop in that instance, and the Great Vault has not provided me. I don't know. It's a hard problem to solve, right?
Like, I've
had enough experiences with tokens over the years to that I ever feel like tokens are the way to go. Like, I've like just my I remember Firelands is a really good example of this. There was no DPS shoulder for warriors or paladins or death knights for that matter, other than their tier. There just wasn't a DPS plate shoulder. There were tanking plate shoulders. And this was, of course, back when we had the distinct difference between tanking and DPS, which we don't really have for armor as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All armor basically has the same stats now, but there just wasn't anything. And so you had to get your tier. And that meant everybody wanted that token. And it's just, granted, we don't do that kind of competition anymore. It just either drops for you or it doesn't. But if you're like your 6th, 7th, 8th week in and the token just isn't dropping, and now, like, are the tokens going to be for any piece of gear, or are they going to be for, like, here's your trinket token? The problem with that is it's going to make, I can see, like, the argument that makes gearing really uninteresting.
Yeah, and that's why I'm bringing it up as a question, because, like, it's an interesting problem that I don't know if we have the skill set to solve as outside observers, because at the end of the day, anything.
Don't go thinking I can solve any of this stuff, guys.
Yeah, we're not game developers. We're not the folks working on the game. Everything we say should be taken with a grain of salt. And generally, it's usually colored by the eyes and perspective of a consumer of the product. But like, I wouldn't be mad if tokens were a little more present, personally. And maybe it becomes like, turn this in for any piece of armor, turn this in for any trinket, or maybe it's a trinket and weapon, and then they drop more often. And like, it allows, to me, like a system that allows players a little bit of an ability to fill in gaps on their own, I think is not necessarily bad. But I understand what you're saying too, like it can feel uninteresting. But the question is feeling interesting worth the feeling bad of all the other players that don't get it?
I was just thinking about it as you were talking about it.
Okay.
One of the things that I think would work better than just having everything be tokens is have the regular gear that drops in the instance. Just have it the way it is right now. But then add to every boss's loot table a token that might drop. And if it does drop, you can redeem it for anything else they drop.
I think that'd be fine.
I think that way the itemization can still be interesting and weird. You can still have pieces that one of my favorite things about some of the itemization we get, especially near the end of an expansion, is when they start playing around with really bizarre procs.
Mm-hmm.
Like the best weapon that the most fun weapon I've ever had to use was the two-handed sword off of Deathwing, Girthalok. Which basically just spawned random tentacles that shot you with with the priest mind flay.
Yeah.
And you could spawn multiple. And if you had two of them, they could each proc them. So I was dual wielding those things in that raid while DPSing because I didn't always tank. I'd usually tanked, but when I had two Girthalocks, it was crazy. And it was completely broken. And it was fun. It didn't need to get fixed because we were in the last tier anyway. And you'd already killed Deathwing twice to get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't really breaking anything at this point to make it easier to kill Deathwing. We've already done it. But I do think that there's, I want to keep that aspect of itemization. I want to keep the ability to put in weird stuff, like my bizarre trinket. I'm going to actually look at this trinket, because it is strange.
I'm fine with that, too, although
if you're watching the stream, your damaging abilities have a high chance to deal 303 physical damage, healing you for 300% of the damage dealt. If this effect overheals, then deal 1,278 physical damage split between nearby enemies over 15 seconds, but suppress the lifesteal effect. So it's, what? This trinket is like, it requires to think about it. You know what I mean? This trinket is, but it's a good trinket. I like having it. I use it. It does decent damage. I don't want to get rid of that level of it. I don't want to get rid of the fun, weird itemization.
Yeah. There's nothing that says you have to get rid of it to do anything else, right? Like, you can still have weird itemization. The problem that I have is when they swing so hard into weird itemization like they did with the corruption procs. And it was a good idea in concept, and it created some very fun stuff if you were DPS. If you were a healer, I felt that there was literally no value in anything for me aside from raw stat output. So, like, I didn't get to play with some of the fun things that a lot of other classes did because I'm primarily a healer. So, like, having trinkets now that have weird procs, I'm fine with that. Like, I have a trinket now that slows a target by 30% while I rip the soul out of their body and shove it into myself to heal myself and give myself more crit. Like, it's a cool, weird thing that any of my specs would feel good using. So it's like there's a line there with the procs as well that needs to be observed, because you don't want, and it was a common complaint I heard back during the end of Battle for Azeroth, is I feel there's no value in any of the procs for me, so what do I care? Like, this itemization is boring for me because I can't use it, or because it doesn't matter, or it doesn't affect my primary, right? So, yeah. Like, I want weird procs, but I want weird procs that feel like they do right now. I'm pretty good with it.
Well, I mean, we probably actually need to move on at this point. We've talked about this quite a bit, and
yeah,
emails and stuff to cover. So, as much as I think we could talk about this for a lot longer, show about it, but yeah. So we're going to move on and do some emails. If you have an email or question for the show, there's a couple ways you can get it to us. The first is to email it to us. Obviously, I said email like three times there. It's podcast@blizzardwatch.com is the email address. A subject line: podcast or Blizzard Watch, so you know it's for the show. Or you can do that thing where you say, you know, for either show, and then just whoever's looking for emails first will grab it. That's mm-hmm. There's also some, like, you know, weird Vulcan music plays, and I'm too lazy to get involved in the actual fight, so Joe usually wins. But regardless, you can do that, or you can go to our Patreon, to our Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel if you're a patron, and I recommend that. Be a patron. It helps us. We like it. It helps us do all the stuff we do content-wise, and it will help us do more content in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to the Q Questions channel, which is not patron-specific. We do still look there, too. One of the questions here came from that today. So, Joe, if you don't mind reading them for us?
Not at all. First question. Hi, boys. I just wondered what you think the best way for the war between the light and void will happen. I was thinking about how the covenants work, and it's clear that we are headed towards the same light slash void. It seems like AU Draenor seems to be the staging ground for it. But how do you see it shaping up? Personally, I hope the Meldraxxi story ends with the gladiators taking off their hoods and you find out they were all ogres who were recently killed by the Lightbound in Draenor. I would love to see something dramatic happening on the actual planet, like the AU Draenor stops spinning and is stuck with one side always facing the sun and the other side facing the darkness, leaving old Draenor in the area in the middle we can explore, both the cold darkness and hot deserts. I think the visual juxtaposition would help sell the story. Huge fan, keep doing what you're doing. This is Uthos, who is a proud patron supporter. Thank you, Uthos. Thoughts?
You're going to make me feel bad now, because I'm going to tell you I don't want them to ever do that storyline. I don't want another... I want at least... Like, what we're doing now is fine, and I'm totally on board, but I don't want to get stuck in anything where I have to pick a side between two combating factions. You know where I'm going with this? Like, I don't want... My Shadow Priest friends are all picking up pitchforks to go stab my paladin friends.
No, I'm right with you.
I don't want to do that. If anything, I think it would be kind of cool if they did do a light-dark storyline, like the light and the void are fighting, if we kind of have to play monkey in the middle and try and stop both of them. Like, you know, like we're trying to explain to the light, we really appreciate all that stuff you do where you illuminate things and make life possible.
But you're worse destroying things.
Yeah, you got to back it. Take it down a notch. And for that matter, to the void, I don't like the crazy that you could stop driving me insane. That would be great. But I do enjoy all that stuff, like possibility and potential. I think we're on the same page there. I think we both enjoy being able to not having the future spelled out for us because anything could happen. That's cool. Now stop driving people crazy with tentacles. That part doesn't need, we don't need any more of that. We've had quite enough tentacles from you fellas. And I'd be okay with that. There's nothing wrong with your idea that you mentioned. It's not something I don't think that old Draenor is there anymore. Like, I'm pretty sure it's gone. That seems to be the implication of the Maghar storyline when they became an allied race back in Battle for Azeroth, is that old Draenor is done. I would be okay. I'd be totally glad to find out that's not the case, that the Maghar have, like, it was from one perspective, and it turns out that from a different perspective, the planet's still there and there are people still on it. That would make me happy. I also don't really like the idea of the Lightbound as this just cartoonish villains who are like all fanatics and all, you know, I would like them to present both sides as having a point. I felt like they actually did a decent job in Warlords of Draenor. I mean, granted, the people who were working directly for the Iron Horde usually weren't the ones who had a point, but we had the both the orcs that you worked with in Frostfire Ridge and the Draenei that you worked with in Shadowmoon Valley, they had sympathetic characters on both sides. I've never forgotten Ginnar's death.
Yeah.
His death, that's, go watch those videos sometime. Go watch both of them. Go watch the Shadowmoon Valley one and watch the Frostfire Ridge one. They're both really good. And they give you an idea of, like, yes, this guy isn't necessarily nice. He's not a nice person, but he cares about his people. And he cares about his world, and he wants to, like, you know, save them. And he's willing to do what has to be done to do that. He's willing to lay down his own life. So I want to see stories that don't just give me, you know, these two cosmic forces duking it out. I want to see people. And I think that's one of the, where Battle for Azeroth worked, it was when it was showing me people.
Yeah, I would agree. Like,
it was showing me the cost of these things.
The people against the backdrop of the larger war, right? Like, that's fine. I think that's a good place to be.
Like, I mean, I don't know anybody, like, I kind of got tired of hearing about Sorfang's orc pain, but Sorfang himself as a character was compelling. It was interesting to watch him, because he wasn't just a one-note orc good, you know, human bad. He was very much a, we've done horrible things.
He was an onion. He had layers.
Yeah, we have we've done horrible things. We can't go back. We can't fix them. We can't just make them not have happened.
But how do we move forward? What is our path forward? Like, that was the existential question that he was trying to pose.
When he died, yes, he died because he wanted his heroic death, and that's truly part of it. But at the same time, he did it standing up to somebody who thought they could just destroy hope and grind everybody into the same ideal. And he was like, no, we'll never let you do this. We'll never lie down for you. You might kill us, but you're not going to beat us. And that's like, there's a lot to the character. There's a lot to the storytelling. There's a lot to like characters who came up from it, like Zappy Boy there, Zakan. There's a lot more that we got to see. It's always better when we get to see the I don't want to say the human cost, because obviously if you're playing Orc, you don't care about the human cost, but the personal cost of these giant things that happen. You don't watch, nobody wants to watch a movie about World War II that never talks about the cost to the people involved. That's just all, you know, if you want that, watch a documentary. If you want fiction, fiction is about people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to see. If there's any light, dark war that comes up, if we have the void and the light fighting, I want to see what it does to the people.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we already have a really good, like, entry point for that, too, right? You have Illyria, and you have, why can't I remember his name now? Oh, my God, my brain is going blank.
Her husband?
Yeah. Oh, God, why? Why brain?
Worst part is you did it to me now.
Tyrellian. Thank you. Wow. Sorry, folks. It's been an interesting day. But you have a really good like meat of a story there because of the conflict between those two. Those are like if they put it at the center of a conflict between light and void, it would make a lot of sense. They've already started laying the seeds for that since Legion, which I think is really cool. They just haven't done anything with it recently because, well, we've been sort of preoccupied with the whole going to the land of the dead thing. So if they could give me a story about the light and the void and the war there and how everything interacts and give me the tension between those two, you know, and there was hinted at in like the Visions of N'Zoth where you have Illyria going fully void and killing Tyrellian and taking their son and everything like that. But the reason it worked so well is because that's something that's in the mind of anybody who's observed her or read the comics or listened to the stories or listened to the interactions between those two and understand how antithetical the light is to the void, how those two hate each other so much. And yet here's this couple that have been in love and devoted for, you know, thousands of years at this point, because time is weird. But you could have a really compelling, really interesting story that revolves around the cost of that war between those two is like sort of the center point. And I'd be here for it. And I'm with you on the same boat. I don't really want them to do something with AU Draenor like that, where the story revolves fully around the planet and all that other stuff like being stuck. It's not that it's a bad idea. It's just not the story I want. I want something more personal. I want something more gritty. It's the same reason where, not to get on like the Star Wars front, but it's the same reason why Rogue One is such a good movie to me, is because it's not really about the war. It's about the people. And even the old World War II movies, the best ones, were all about the people, at least to me. And even horror movies that I love and I get really into, it's about the people and not necessarily always about the monster. I want that sort of level of intimacy. And if they can give me a story of the war between the light and the void, where we're in the middle and we're trying to save the cost of that war from happening, maybe it's unraveling the existence of the fabric of reality that we're trying to keep together. And at the center of it is a personal story for individuals that are at the opposite ends of that, or what it means for them, what they're losing or what they're gaining or what they're fighting for, then it becomes compelling. And I'm here for that. So, but I hope that answers your question. I think we can move on to the next one here. Dear Cold Observers, the mission table for Shadowlands does not feel right. Am I doing something wrong? It requires too much thought for a metagame. If I screw up, it requires too much anima to heal followers for someone who cannot grind anima. I don't even have the time for dungeons at this point. I would love to raid again. I miss it so much, but I can't. And I feel like Blizzard went from a great model with N'Zoth's Visions, which allowed for challenging solo content, to having so much to do that I can't keep up. And now I can't play the mission table game either. Also, I saw an article that Activision is planning to use the Warzone model for its IPs, including WoW. What on earth does this mean? So, I mean, do you even bother with the mission table?
I do, but I do like one or two a day. I don't really like, I don't work very hard at it. I just like, I throw a couple up on my way out the door.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
I feel like there's this cool idea in the mission table, but I never really got tremendously invested in it. It just, it didn't grab me. Like I there's other stuff I do I like a lot more. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the mission table is another example of something that I think fell just a little bit short of what it was intended to be. And I could be wrong. I could be completely off base here, but it feels like the original idea was for it to be something similar to almost an auto chess battler, but it's really not. It's the same old mission table that we've had for years with extra slots and a new animation, and it's roughly the same thing. The only difference is now there's that element of auto chess where you have more things that you have to evaluate on a table and compare. You have more abilities that you need to manage. And I agree. I think that the anima cost for healing is way too high. And part of that is because they want you to grind anima to increase your mission table's level so that it doesn't cost as much to heal, but you're still in the same point of grinding that much anima. And I get it. People don't want to do it. I'll be flat out with you. I'm not grinding anima. I don't care. I've done that grind for everything else so much that it's not a system that I care about.
I get 1,000 anima or a little bit more sometimes a week.
Same.
I have a quest that requires that, and that bumps my renown level by one. That's the one I do. So I do that, and then I'm done. And I think that a lot of people are in that same boat. Between that and having to get, you know, soul ash for legendaries type stuff, I just bumped up my legendary to the second tier just because I just have not been focusing on it. There's a lot to grind. But to answer your second part of your question with the Warzone model, Call of Duty Warzone's a game. It's a Call of Duty franchise game. It's a free-to-play battle royale.
Yeah, it's on the Battle.net launcher right now if you have it on your PC.
Along with like several other Call of Duty games. And the thing is, what they're saying is Warzone is extremely popular. It is one of the, I think it is currently the most dominant Call of Duty model. It's basically put out Warzone, and you don't even need to own or buy Call of Duty Modern Warfare to play it.
Yeah.
You basically just get Warzone free. Like, you just go get the Warzone app that's free, and then you can play in this Battle Royale Call of Duty thing. And it's incredibly popular, and it is generating income because it is a free-to-play game, and we all know how free-to-play games do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do not play Warzone, so I can't tell you, is it balanced? Do you need to like spend tons of money to be good at it? I can't tell you, but it is extremely popular. And when they say they want to do the Warzone model, basically what they're saying is they want to introduce that kind of free-to-play, addictive gameplay loop to other franchises of theirs. They want that kind of thing. It's basically a different approach to the concept of live service or games as a service. They want to basically make a Call of Duty game that's the Warzone is the Call of Duty game that answers that need, that gets people to get in a gameplay loop and play and play and play. I don't feel like World of Warcraft needs to worry about this. World of Warcraft has successfully been doing this since 2004. I'm still here, guys.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the article that I know which article you're referencing as far as that goes, and that article is making an assumption. Nothing was said that they're going to do, right? And honestly,
literally all that's said is that they want to use the Warzone model.
Yes. For more games. That's it.
Yes, that's it. They didn't say for every single franchise that we have, but they said they would like to have that for more of their games. And that's it.
And that's fine. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to start seeing things worth like, and the free-to-play model is not something new for Blizzard, right? You had Heroes of the Storm. Heroes of the Storm was free-to-play, and you paid for cosmetic stuff, or you could buy loot boxes, and they put loot boxes, and that was successful. The thing that I think is going to be interesting, the model for Warzone is the same as almost every Battle Royale, in which it does what's called a Battle Pass. Heck, even at this point, Rocket League has a Battle Pass. It's one of those things where you pay the $10 a month to go through a period of unspecified period of time or whatever the value is to earn rewards, and those rewards are supposed to be enough to keep you playing. And that does work in battle royales. It worked for Fortnite. It's how Fortnite got to be so huge. It's working for Warzone. That's one of the reasons Warzone gets to be as popular as it is, because it gives that feedback loop.
Yeah, Apex Legends, same thing.
Apex Legends. But the idea of applying that to more games, if done right, isn't necessarily a bad thing. I could see, I'll make the point, League of Legends, I think, does this too. I don't really play enough League anymore to really know the ins and outs of it, but it seems like there's something like that as well that they're starting to introduce to it. It seems to be the way of the future for free-to-play games, is instead of making players pay for all these packs and skins and everything individually, which they can do, they can still do that. It's if a player wants to just pay for the battle pass and earn rewards by playing the game, that's the avenue that they're going to go. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I could see that being applied pretty okay to games like Heroes of the Storm, or even to a certain extent Hearthstone. So I think Hearthstone might even have a battle pass at this point. I don't remember. I haven't been playing a whole lot of it. But again, WoW is going to be probably fairly exempt from that, because WoW makes money, right? WoW is not in the hole. It doesn't cost more money than it produces for them. And as long as that continues to happen, that model will not be applied to WoW. The article that I know that the person is referencing isn't necessarily the one that just says they're bringing it to more games, but there was speculation that it would come to WoW. WoW won't be free to play unless the game is doing seriously bad. I mean, right now we pay our monthly fee. If you're listening to this, chances are very good you pay a monthly fee to WoW, and that's,
or you use the if you buy a token to get game time type thing. Someone else paid for that token, so someone else has basically bought your month of WoW in exchange for your gold. That's what that is. So in the end, they're still getting this. In fact, they're getting a little more.
Yeah,
it's like it's $20 for a token, so they're actually getting an extra $5 to you know, if you're doing it that way. But in the end, it is all still being paid. And keep in mind too, Shadowlands was the fastest selling PC game title ever for like a month.
Yeah.
Oh, before Cyberpunk 2077 came out, and nobody, they didn't have to worry about, like, you know, the problems Cyberpunk 2077 did, because it was on multiple platforms. WoW is just on like two platforms right now, PC and Mac, and that's it. There's no console version of WoW. So yeah, they're doing fine. World of Warcraft is, every time you get an earnings call in the past year, it's been World of Warcraft continues to perform better end over end. It's like, yeah, every quarter they've been doing better. The chances of them having to switch to some kind of free to play model is not very likely.
Yeah. So hope that answers your question. Our next one, dear watchers, at the end of the Maldraxxus segment of the leveling campaign, the voice of the Primus says, "Bring my warning to the Archon, the Winter Queen, and the Sire. They must see to our defenses. Do not let Zoval reach the Sepulchre. The Arbiter is the final key. Protect her, or all is lost." Do we have any idea what Sepulchre he is referring to? Thanks again. Belloc of Dragonblood. No?
I don't. Nope, but I think it's interesting he says the Arbiter is the final key, because that makes me think it's Orbos.
Yeah, I kind of think so too. Like, at least that's the way Orbos, it means.
Orbos is in fact originally some kind of giant grave marker. Let me explain why there's all those doors look an awful lot like tombstones, man.
They do. They really, really do. I mean, it's an interesting thing, because, like, for those that don't know, the word basically is a monument made of rock or stone, and usually in which a dead person is laid or buried. And we've been speculating about this a lot on Lore Watch, which, again, shameless self-promotion, listen to Lore Watch if you're interested in hearing what we think about Orbos. We've talked about it a bunch. Orbos is definitely something that was created. It is not naturally occurring. And it seems like the Primus has more knowledge than maybe the others do. Maybe not. Don't know. The whole idea that Kyrestria has her memories ripped out at some point, possibly. The Winter Queen might know, might not know. And Sire Denathrius is now in a sword. So it's really hard to get a beat on whether or not he's being forthcoming when we interrogate him. But the idea that this Orbos was created, I don't think is in debate. the idea that is in debate is, what does it mean? What is Ouroboros? What was it created for? Because that's the part we don't know about Shadowlands and all of these realms of death, is why. Why were they created? Why specifically these regions? Why were they made manifest in the way they are? Because they're all very distinct and they all seem to have a purpose, but it seems like so much more than those zones are telling us their purpose was for. And I think it does all link back to Ouroboros in some capacity. And I think Ouroboros is intrinsically tied to the Arbiter. Because that's an entity we don't know much about. We know that the Arbiter exists. We know that the Chamber of the Arbiter has projection tables for all of the key leaders of all of the Shadowland zones, including the cracked pedestal where we assume Zolval once was, you know, capable of standing or projecting. But why? Why is Ouroboros important? What is it preventing? What is it doing? Is it a linchpin? Is it something? Because one of the interesting things too about it is Ouroboros seems like it's namely a center point of everything at this. Everything flows through it, regardless of whether the default goes to the Maw after it does or not. It's in the middle. It's in that in-between point. All the souls that come into the Shadowlands are supposed to go there first. Is that why it was created, or is there something more? We have no idea. But the Primus seems to know a little bit more, which also might be why the Jailer made such a big deal of ripping the memories out of the Primus. Because, I mean, we don't know for sure, but the Primus and the Rune Carver seem like one and the same entity. We've talked about that a bunch. But yeah, it would seem like that would be a really good motivation of why you don't want him to remember anything. Anything else to add to that one, Matt?
I think that pretty much covers it. Basically, we don't know, but there's lots of reasons to believe it might be Ouroboros.
Yeah. And I think we have time for one last one, which is great because we have one last one left, I think. Yes. Greetings, Skardashian, Patreon supporter from the Grizzly Hills. Blizzard Watch, love the discussion about new specs, not new classes, but the big question to me is, why are we still stuck at the 50 character limit? With all the new races added, it's hard to collect them all if you've been playing for some time. Many tunes have memories and emotional links or even soulbound items that no longer exist, and I don't trust I won't lose the transmog if I'm making them difficult to deliver. The next one is for Lore Watch, and I'm definitely going to. So, yeah, why are we stuck at the 50 character limit? Do you want to take a stab at it before I go in?
Because it cannot be changed. There's nothing that can be done. Cease your arguments. They did it like way back when they were like, no, who's going to want 50 characters? I mean, they coded the game and they put that in there because they're like, what? There's like four per faction. Like, you know, so if they want to play one of every class and you want to use one of every race and you're going to have one of every class of every race, I mean, come on. And they figured 50 was a big enough number. And it probably is for most people. The vast majority of people probably don't have 50 characters. I say this as somebody who absolutely does have 50 characters. But, I mean, I've routinely gone delete sprees. Let me put it to you that way. There's winnowing. Oh, yeah, I didn't play that rogue again after that month where I got it to level 40. Boom, you're gone. So, yeah, I don't think... I feel like that's probably something to do with the way the game was originally coded. Now, they've done a lot of work on the game since. But it's always surprising, like, how hard it was to change backpacks.
So, think about
backpacks.
Yeah. That
worked, the amount of slots on backpacks, they had to work really hard to make it so you could get it bigger with, like, racial abilities or the oh, bloody heck. Come on. The thing that lets you log into your account. I don't know the word for it at the moment. Authenticator.
There you go.
The authenticator. So there's a lot of work for these things. It's often surprisingly more work than you think. And it's probably a pretty significant amount of work to change the character limit without, say, accidentally erasing your characters, which they don't want to do. So I don't know. I honestly don't know why they have not changed it. I would think it's probably because it's non-trivial to change.
So this is all speculation, but this is from the tech nerd side of my geekery here. I think that it's partially because of how the game was coded, but I don't think it's anything to do with the actual game engine code itself. I think it has everything to do with the servers and the storage system. So one of the things that you have to understand is every character you have is a permanent object that is stored somewhere in a data center. And it sounds like that's not a lot, but here's the thing. Permanent object or persistent object storage is taxing on a system. And as you have more players that approach those limits, you now start opening yourself up to system degradation depending on how solid your infrastructure is. There's a reason that there's new technology emerging that is trying to revolutionize how object storage works, particularly within the last couple of years, because that is the biggest bottleneck for large game companies that try to do stuff like MMOs, as well as email companies and software companies that have large user bases. And even at a million users, if there was only a million users playing WoW, which we know, I'm pretty sure it's probably a larger number than that at this point, that's a lot of objects to store, because every time you go to access your account, your metadata loads that says, here are all your characters on all of the servers that you have access to, and here's an output or a thumbnail of what they have on them. Then when you go to load into it, there's a reason why, even with an SSD and super fast internet and all every bell and whistle you could possibly push out there right now, that blue bar still exists for us. It's not an instantaneous load. It has less to do with the realm itself and more to do with your character data from that permanent object storage or persistent object storage being called and pulled up, because now you have to interact with everything in your bank, everything inside of your void storage, everything that your character has as far as data goes. And yeah, at the end of the day, it seems like bytes, but those bytes are being constantly accessed. Now spread that across everybody in your raid group. Now spread that across everybody in your guild. Now spread that across everybody in your realm. Now spread that across everybody on your whatever they call the combined realms now, war shards or where. That just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, requires more and more bandwidth, requires more and more processing power, requires more and more technical leverage to make it run smoothly. Imagine you had a blue bar every time you opened up your bag. Imagine you had a blue bar every time you opened up or swapped gear or changed specs. We already have it when we load through zones because we're moving through different instance servers and things like that. Imagine that exponentially. That's part of the reason why these caps existed and still, I believe, exist to this day. It's very expensive and very system taxing to increase that number. Because now if you don't have a cap, let's say you're the type of character that has 100 characters, I would be that person. I would just keep creating characters. I'm at the character limit almost every single time. It is very rare that I go on deletion sprees. And when I do, I generally do it because I want to create another character somewhere. Now, if I didn't have that limit, I would never delete anything. I am a digital pack rat. And I know I'm not alone in that regard. And I can know that somebody in chat or somebody who's listening to this at home is the same way I am. I still have gear in my bank from vanilla that I refuse to get rid of, just like you do here, Skardashian, where it's not that I think that I'm going to lose the transmog. It's that quote-unquote physical piece of gear took so much for me to get that I will never, ever, ever get rid of it. I worked too hard to get that. It has too much value to me personally. Now spread that across 100 characters. Spread that across 200 characters. Now you're starting to get into a system where, depending on how many players are playing or accessing it, it starts to degrade the experience for everybody. So I do believe that Matt is right in that there is a code, partially coding related issue, but I would not be surprised if more of the decision to keep that in place is because, one, who the heck needs 50 characters? Unless, you know, you're me and just have 40 shaman. But also, what point do you restrict down to keep everything running smoothly from a server standpoint? And I know dang well that the server team and the infrastructure team that work on these games, it's a constant struggle, and they make the best decisions they can. And I have a feeling that this still being a cap has a lot. So that was a very long-winded way of saying it's for our best interest that it stays that way, I think, because caps mean the games run smooth. All right, sorry about that. Anything else you want to add, Matt? All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today. So Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast and a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue in an ads-free site experience. And as we are still in the month of February, we are still doing a Patreon drive So that means if you are not a supporter and you enjoy the content that we produce, please consider supporting us at Patreon. Everything that you can contribute does help us continue to keep the site operational, as we are 100% driven by community. We've talked about this a bunch, but we wouldn't be here without you folks. So if you can spare a dollar and you can do that, please do so. We understand that if you can't, but if you can, it's much, much appreciated.
Well, thank you, Joe. Again, people, if you've got an email or question for the show, you can hit us on our Patreon at the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel or the Q Questions channel, or you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. For myself and Joe, I want to say thanks to everybody for being here, and we'll be back next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.